Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Welcome to Zona Politics. I'm your host, Jim Ninsel, executive editor of Tucson Weekly and other Tucson local media productions. And we're here today with a couple of journalists. We've got Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star and Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel. And we're going to talk about what's going on in this mayor's race. But before we begin, I want to congratulate Tim on his Society of Professional Journalists Pulliam Fellowship that he recently won. And Tim, talk a little bit about what this fellowship means for your readers out there at the Arizona Daily Star, and for you, for that matter.
Well, yeah, so it's going to take me a little bit out of the regular rotation I've been in. You know, I had been doing three columns a week for five, six years. And I've been down to two this year, and I'll probably be down to one, probably one on average or so for the next year or so. While I am doing this fellowship, which the proposal I made, which won the fellowship, is about investigating efforts to manipulate or sway public opinion by government entities and politicians about the border and migration. And so I'll be writing a variety of different columns and maybe things that are like book chapter length probably on that same theme about the manipulation of public opinion. Some of that will come out in the paper as soon as I can get it together. And some will probably be, I mean, it doesn't really start till the next maybe 2 weeks from now. So a lot of this is going to be a long-term thing. But part of what I want to do is be relevant in the presidential campaign so that we can analyze some of the issues that are going to be hot as the campaign gets going.
Well, congratulations again, and we'll look forward to seeing what comes out of that. Let's talk about this mayoral race. We have these three candidates, City Councilwoman Rahina Romero, who's been on the council in Ward 1 for a decade now. We have Randy Dorman, a downtown developer who has not been in politics before, and we have former state lawmaker Steve Farley, who, of course, got his start.
Can't stay away from politics.
Yeah, he can't stay away. Got his start running for a city council seat and did not come out successful in that. Went off to the legislature, was successful there, ran for governor, not so successful. So he's one for three, and he's going for two for four, batting 500, hoping with this one. Dylan, let me ask you this. Do you see much difference in policy coming from these candidates? I have not, and I'm just curious if you have.
That's an excellent question. First, let me just congratulate Tim on that Pulliam Fellowship. That is a really big deal, pretty prestigious, and you've got a very worthy project. Kudos.
Thank you.
On the policy differences between the mayoral candidates, I mean, there are some shades of emphasis. In the main, we've got three fairly, you know, centrist, slightly left of center, standard Democrats running. You know, they would defer on where some of their specific priorities might be, like right out of the gate. But I don't think you would see, you know, too much variation between their what they might actually get done if any single one of them were elected. And, you know, which I think is one reason why we are seeing so much just absolutely ridiculous mudslinging being done on their behalf with, you know, all of these attack mailers and ads and everything else and independent expenditure committees who are really trying to undermine other candidates rather than promote a candidate and their specific policies. It's I think worthy of noting that every election, TucsonSentinel.com offers candidates the opportunity to write a pretty lengthy op-ed piece or pieces with the requirement that they tackle a specific topic and tell us exactly what they would do about it and what the challenges are and how they might pay for it. And none of these candidates have taken us up on that offer this year. couple have tried, but they just sent us basically press releases, and we said, no, we're not going to publish that. Give us specifics. And they haven't wanted to do that. Instead, they let surrogates, you know, these committees that they are, you know, legally barred from coordinating with, but are not supporting them, just sling mud and, you know, shovels full of stuff that's even worse than mud.
And Tim, this was something you touched upon in a column a couple of weeks ago about, you know, Raheena Romero. I guess one of the key differences that Raheena is trying to highlight in this campaign is that she's participating in the city's matching funds program. You know, that program has been around since the 1980s, with spearheaded by Tom Volge, the one-time mayor of Tucson, and the idea was to limit spending by agreeing to a cap on how much you could spend, but then you'd get a dollar-for-dollar match from the city. And Raheena's participating in this, and the other two are not, but at the same time, she seems the greatest beneficiary of the outside spending that we're seeing, Tim.
Yes. So she has agreed to abide by those limits. If she can raise up to $130,684 this year, that's the limit, and then the match brings it up to dollar for dollar match brings it up to a cap of $261,000. So yeah, that's as you mentioned, that's an experiment that has kind of worked through the years, arguably. But the other two, it's really ironic. The other two have raised so far, I mean, we'll get new numbers later that will show more than this, but they've raised numbers that were lower than that $260,000 cap, and they are not in the program. So there's that. And then, of course, as you just mentioned, beyond that, especially on Romero's behalf, there's been this just enormous flood of outside spending. I calculated yesterday, I just pulled all the filings I could find and calculated $510,000 supporting her, which, correct me if I'm wrong, you would know better than me, Jim. I believe it's unprecedented and certainly unexpected this year. Is that right? Unprecedented?
I have never seen this much outside spending in a city of Tucson raised to my memory. Dylan, you remember anything like this?
Not to this extent. I mean, we've certainly seen, independent expenditure committees be involved at various levels, and sometimes with, you know, some pretty healthy amounts of money. But what we're seeing, and not just, supporting Romero, but when you add them all up together, it's really pretty much over the top this year.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it's going to top, it's going to near or top $1 million of outside spending is my guess, because some of this stuff hasn't been filed yet, or it's been filed in places where at least I haven't been able to find it. And there are ads, for example, that are running that I haven't seen accounted for yet. So yeah, there's tons of money being spent these last days. And you're right that it does seem, I think, to be part of kind of differentiating people who aren't that different. I mean, I think they are different as people, but in a way they represent just kind of groups. So, you know, obviously with Romero, she's part of the Grijalva group. Farley is associated with the Gifford group. And if you were to pick a group with Dorman, I guess you'd say the Chamber of Commerce group or something like that. She doesn't have a kind of political machine or what have you behind her. Mm-hmm. But the Chamber is there supporting her. And kind of that's beyond their individual characteristics. That's mostly what differentiates them, I would say, is kind of who their association is.
And some of these mailers are making, I think, as Dylan pointed out, some pretty outrageous mudslingy claims. I mean, linking Raheena Romero to Donald Trump seems like a stretch to me.
To me, too. It's kind of absurd. I mean, she somehow got Cody Ritchie, who's a Republican businessman in town, runs an insurance company, to be her co-chair. You know, he's agreed to that. And I don't know. People generally think this bipartisanship thing is a good thing. But, of course, we're in a primary. Democrats don't like Trump supporters. So, I mean, I don't think it's that significant, really, but it's something that Romero's critics can bash her with, and they have, as Dylan reported on yesterday.
Her other co-chair is, you know, the founder of the Arizona Green Party, Carolyn Campbell. And if they weren't bashing her for some supposed connection for Trump, she'd be, you know, being bashed for that, perhaps. Although that might play a little bit better to some of the more, liberal Democratic voters in this primary. And the fact that this primary is so decisive, because there is no Republican candidate running at all for mayor, And we have an independent who will be on the general election ballot in November and possibly a Green Party candidate. But it's pretty likely that the mayoral election will be decided in this primary. And that's why these stakes are so high. And that's why so much money is getting tossed around. Tim, you mentioned that some of these filings aren't there yet. I think a lot of them just aren't in yet. A lot of these independent groups were very strategically founded, first registered after the well after the filing deadline, which was July 15th for a period that ended June 30th. So anybody who started one of these things since June 30th won't have to file much of anything about where they got their money or where they spent their money until after the election is over, because of how our campaign finance laws are a little bit, still allow people to get away with hiding things until later.
Yeah, it's hard to follow and hard to make transparent for the public.
Dylan, there is another independent expenditure committee out there going after Rahina Romero that has been organized by Luis Gonzalez, but your reporting shows perhaps some Republican money pouring into that effort. Luis is a Democrat who has long been an anti-Grijalva guy. Talk a little bit about what you learned about that particular committee.
Well, unfortunately, we haven't learned quite enough to my satisfaction, but I thought it was just an interesting little tidbit. We should note that Joe Ferguson from The Star was also digging into this. This outside group has decided this year to focus on attacking Romero, saying that she shouldn't be our next mayor. And even though in previous years they basically had almost no money, they had less than $31 in their bank account to kick off the year and only a handful of other small donations, suddenly in June they got two checks for $10,000 each that showed up for one reason or another from at least one of the donors has a pretty close association with Republican National Committeeman Bruce Ash. Now, Bruce Ash has said that he has nothing to do with this donation, but it came from his late father's second wife. And so you have somebody with a pretty close connection to one of the biggest Donald Trump boosters in the entire United States funding an attack on somebody because of their supposed tie to Donald Trump.
It has certainly become an interesting race, and you know, let's,
there are layers of irony going on here.
Tim, you mentioned the Cody Ritchie being involved with Rahina, and I think one of Rahina's concerns going into this primary was that she was going to be tagged as not being business friendly, that she would be opposed to, you know, the basically the development and whatnot. And so I think one of the reasons she said she brought Cody on was to kind of inoculate herself against those charges, to show that she can work with the business community. And do you think that has backfired on her to some degree in this particular race?
Sure, it has. I mean, that seems more like a general election tactic than a primary election tactic, because obviously in the primary you have to appeal mostly to Democrats, whereas in a general election you'll have to appeal to Republicans and independents who don't, well, some of whom will vote in the primary. So, yeah, it has backfired a bit. And, you know, I sympathize a little bit because I like the idea that she's able to attract that kind of support. And honestly, you know, if you look at some of her other stands, I mean, she's frequently associated herself with the Gadsden development on the west side. So that's a kind of another pro-business, pro-development stand she takes. But like when she did the editorial board, and this is available online at Tucson.com, when she did the editorial board for the two other candidates with us, they asked her simple setup question, you know, what's your top priority? She said that climate change and adapting to climate change. And honestly, I found that really surprising. I'm not saying it's not a really top priority, but it is I don't think it's a top priority, the top priority for most Tucson voters, let me put it that way. And I think her joining the Center for Biological Diversity, being associated with Raul Grijalva, has put her much more strongly in the environmentalist camp. So bringing that back to your original point, that is why, especially in a general election campaign, having the endorsement of someone like co-chair Cody Ritchie could be useful to her.
And you know, Farley Steve Farley, the former state lawmaker, got hammered this week with some mailers going after some of his education votes and suggesting that he was anti-education. And Dylan, you want to tackle that one?
You know, I didn't personally get that mailer myself.
Oh.
At least I didn't know.
I got that one.
In my mailbox, so I can't speak to the specific claims. I saw it briefly, pass me by on social media. One thing about Farley we haven't mentioned, and maybe we should just in the interest of fairness, is that, pretty much right out of the gate, Regina Romero tagged Steve Farley as the Jim Click candidate.
Right.
He's accepting donations, and he's having assistance from that. Jim Click is a major national Republican player as well. So here you have more insinuations of somebody not being a true Democrat.
Impurity.
Part got the Chamber of Commerce endorsement. So you kind of see like these various parts of the business community split amongst these three Democratic candidates.
Yeah, and it's you got to wonder, does the chamber endorsement help you a lot in a Democratic primary?
Probably not so much in a Democratic primary. I mean, it might get you a little bit more money and help, with some fundraising. But the people who show up for primaries are generally, the most committed, the hardcore party's activist base. So the Democratic primary voters are in general more liberal than Democrats overall, and then thus certainly more liberal than the general electorate, even though independents are able to go grab a ballot if they want to vote in this Democratic primary. Turnout is so low, and it ends up every year, every cycle, especially in the city cycles, being focused so much on just the members of the party that that maybe gives them a definite leg up to those familiar faces that people have voted for, and people have cast ballots for Romero and Farley before, or at least considered them on their ballot, and that this is Dorman's first stab at elective office, although she has served on some boards and commissions. She was on the charter change commission a few years back, so she's got she's seen the inner workings of some of this stuff.
Does all this mudslinging between Romero and Farley accrue some support to Dorman from voters who say, listen, I've had enough of watching you two attack each other. I'm going to go with somebody who's not doing all of that.
I could see that happening. As Dylan just said, Farley and Romero have strong name recognition locally. But, yeah, there could be that kind of turnoff pox on all your houses except for you kind of effect. I'm not positive. I'm curious what you think about this. Dylan, you mentioned how the primary electorate tends to be more liberal, et cetera, and there tends to be a small turnout. Joe reported today it's been 20% of primary voters so far who have turned in their ballots. And I'm just wondering if it's not going to be a much broader electorate, Democratic primary electorate this time, because people see that the stakes are high, that this is probably the election, and therefore pay closer attention, and maybe it'll be a broader sweep. What do you guys think? Is that possible?
I think, until I'm convinced otherwise, I think the primary turnout in a off-year election is probably going to be, somewhere in the 30%. Neighborhood. If 20% have already voted, my suspicion is those are the people who had already made up their minds before they even got their ballots. They knew who they wanted to vote for. But what I had heard, and that kind of gets back to the horse race of this election, is that, and this was a couple weeks ago, things may have changed because of all these mailers and these efforts to persuade voters. But I had heard that Farley and Romero were running about 30% each, kind of knotted up, and that the Randy Dorman was running at about 10%, which left about 30% undecided of those who were being polled. And, again, things definitely can change as these pieces hit people's mailboxes and closing arguments are made and people focus in on more about who they're voting for. But from what I had heard, it was a close race. And I don't know if you guys have heard updates on those numbers or not.
Dylan, have you?
I haven't. In general, that's what I've heard, that, people aren't releasing too many details about their internal polls, that they're, or not really polling so much as trying to keep the pulse on where ballots are being returned from and all of that. This is such a different sort of election that, it's really kind of hard to say if we will have a much greater turnout than usual. It's been a while since we've had a hard fought mayoral primary.
20 years.
And then you have the other party with nobody running for mayor at all. You know, the Republicans don't have anyone on the ballot. They don't even have a write-in candidate to try and make sure they get through to November. So right there, that pretty much suppresses Republican turnout. They might show up to cast a ballot for one of their council candidates. But, you know, the nature of this race really puts a lid on how many people are going to take part.
And I guess we will see in just a couple of weeks who comes out on top in this race. And I actually, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Zona Politics here on KXCI, and we're talking with Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star and Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel. I'm your host, Jim Ninsel from the Tucson Weekly. And we're rapidly running out of time here. We've got about 4 minutes left. And I wanted to touch on this Ward 1 race for Hina Romero leaving the Ward 1 office. So that's an open seat on the council, a four-way Democratic primary. Dylan, this is your ward over there on the west side. Lane Santa Cruz, a former aide to Romero, Sami Hamed, a former aide to Raul Grijalva, Miguel Ortega, a former aide to Karen Ulick and a longtime rabble-rouser, and a political newcomer, Rob Elias. Dylan, you're getting these guys reaching out in your neighborhoods. What are you sensing out there?
Again, it's pretty hard to say. You've got, I think some broader differences between the candidates and some of their takes. The Sanctuary City initiative, which we will find out pretty soon whether it will actually be on the ballot this November or not, is something that divides them. And you've got familiar names and some not so familiar names, and it's really, really hard to tell who might come out on top in this four-way race. You've got Sami Hamed and Miguel Ortega maybe dividing the what you might refer to as the anti-Grijalva vote. Mm-hmm. And Lane Santa Cruz having the so-called Grijalva machine behind her, some folks who do know how to turn out votes. She might have an edge going into this, but it really comes down to who's knocked on enough doors and shaken enough hands. And if you're just looking at the signs, of course, signs really don't win elections. But, Sami Hamed's got the best signs going.
And Rob Elias has a name, even though he's a political newcomer, of the longtime Pima County supervisor, although he's no relation. That could even help in a very low turnout where people may not be familiar with these candidates.
Yeah, and especially on the west side, the south side, the name Elias has some resonance. So having that, he might get some people filling in the bubble just because of what his name is. And that is certainly a factor as well. And given that, this will probably be pretty low turnout, a couple thousand votes would make a huge, huge difference in how that city council primary plays out.
Or even a couple hundred. And Dylan, speaking of a couple hundred votes, you got a bad ballot in this election, as did about 1,000 of your fellow Tucsonans.
Yeah, actually about 3,000 people either got a ballot, 1,000 people were sent a ballot for the wrong party, and then about another 2,000, their ballot was mailed to an old address. At this point, I think everybody should be have gotten already the ballot that they are supposed to be voting. The problem was that the city's list of who to send ballots to and which party ballot to send them was pulled at the end of June. Well, the party registration deadline was not until the end of July. So everybody who changed their party or their address in that month ended up, not getting the correct one at the time that they should have. But
if you still
have not gotten your ballot, or if you got the wrong ballot and still haven't gotten the right one, you should call up the elections office at the city clerk's office and they will get you straightened out.
And Tim, any thoughts on this Ward 1 race?
Yeah, I mean, one of you said, you would give the kind of get out the vote advantage to Lane Santa Cruz because she's got the backing of some very experienced political operators in associated with Raul Grijalva and that whole group. And so, yeah, when you have, as you said, the anti-Grijalva or non-Grijalva vote being split, not just two ways, but now three ways, I would think that that gives her the advantage over her counterparts. But those names, I don't know. I think those names, Miguel Ortega, just for being who he is, Sammy Hamed for the experience he's had, and then Rob Elias, just for the Elias name, all of them have, you know, a bit of attraction to their name. So it's going to be a very divided election. Let me put it that way.
And it probably doesn't hurt to be the only woman on the ballot in that particular race, although a name like Lane may not stand out as a female name either.
That's true.
That is a very good point that, you know, there is a certain and not insubstantial percentage of Democratic primary voters who will gravitate towards a female candidate if they're not, you know, really driven otherwise, although, you know, there's not like a huge gender flag with the name Lane, a little bit. And she certainly, you know, put her face on a lot of her signs and materials and, you know, subtly gotten that out as well.
All right. Hey, there's a lot we didn't get to today, including Kurt Schilling and the Sanctuary City and hashtag Green Shirt Guy. But I hope we can talk about some of that stuff in future weeks. I want to thank my guests, Dylan Smith from the Tucson Sentinel, Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star, for taking some time to talk about the city election. Get out and vote, and we'll be back next week.
Zona Politics is made possible with the generous support of the Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org. Support for Zona Politics is provided by Hotel Congress in historic downtown Tucson. Hotel Congress is known for its world-famous taproom, Cup Cafe, and Club Congress, offering local and national acts inside and outside on the plaza. More information at hotelcongress.com and 622-8848.